The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. I hear that a goal was scored in Spain this week. We might have time to get to that in your special commemorative Wu Lei is on the scoreboard edition of the podcast, but there were plenty of goals, drama, red cards, and a lot more to talk about on the field closer to home, and we're going to run our rule over that primarily this week and look forward to some interesting fixtures coming up as well. I'm your host, Steve Crooks, and joining us are our regular experts, Brandon Chemez in Beijing. How are you doing this week, Brandon?
Hey, Steve, how are you doing? Coming here from the two meetings, Beijing, so it's a very harmonious time.
A bit less harmony from the Shanghai side of things, I imagine. And how are you holding up there this week, Cam?
All right, yeah, I suppose.
Well, there's no getting around it. I think we have to start by looking back at some very dramatic opening fixtures from round one on the weekend. And as much as I'd love to skip over it, I think we do need to start with the Shanghai derby. I'd be interested to see what the mood was like in the stadium, Cam, because it's one of the weirder 4-0s that I've ever seen, having watched the game, in that it was a game of three thirds. Shanghai International Port Group should have blown them away early doors, had some awful finishing. Shenhua were in it for the next half hour, conceded two sloppy goals at awful times, and absolutely fell apart after that, and it really could have been 6 or 7, and they were an absolute liability. Is that a fair judgment of the game, and is that how it felt, being there on the terraces?
I think it was fairly even in the first half, to be honest. I think Shenhua were not great. SIPG maybe had the better of it, but in the end, there was a late goal in the first half. It's always a bad time to lose. Bai Jiajun got sent off, which is just an absolutely ridiculous thing to do, and this is his fourth time he's been sent off in a derby, and that is just completely stupid beyond description. And after that, it was just there was no way back, and 4-0, understandably, for Shenhua fans, extremely annoyed, and the mood was pretty grim. And I just think the sad thing is that the Shanghai derby until fairly recently was a fixture which was one of the best in the league. Everyone looked forward to it. Now it's like there's lost all kind of suspense.
Well, you know, you know what's going to happen. You just don't know how they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. There's always that to look forward to. I mean, but before we continue sticking the boot into Shenhua, Brandon, we should probably give some credit to the winning team. They looked a lot more fluid, I think, than in the Super Cup. Akhmedov probably making the difference. Do you think that him and Oscar are basically undroppable in the midfield at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a hard equation for them, because in the Super Cup, they had really no midfield. There was no one to connect the get the ball to Oscar, Hulk and Elkeson. In this one, from the bits that I caught, this one was definitely a lot better, and it's going to be a tough decision as to, does he sit Hulk, does he sit Elkeson, or does he switch off, how that's going to work, because I think they need Akhmedov out there.
Yeah, Akhmedov probably the best player on the pitch. In a strange way, I think Guarin had the best individual game of someone whose team has been gubbed 4-0 that I've ever seen. He was kind of everywhere. It's a shame none of his teammates were on side. We could talk all day, and I'm sure some listeners would love it, Cam, about everything that's wrong at Shenhua. How long do you think it would take to fix? I mean, assuming the club were to wake up with better ownership tomorrow, there's so many years of neglect there that I almost don't know where to start.
To sum up in a nutshell, I mean, the club's never really signed top domestic players for a very long time now. We all know that there's the price quality ratio on Chinese players is very low, and there's good reasons not to do that, but they're not even trying in this regard. They've put all the stock in the young players. They did get some excellent young players who are very highly rated from the Gumbao school, but at the same time, I think letting Li Jinbing go was a very big mistake. Li Peng is extremely poor defender, who's not even CSL standard, and Li Jinbing is not someone who the club can really afford to let go of, but they did anyway. So Zhou Jun at Dalian is kind of, even though he's left Shenhua, he's still managing to spin his web of trickery and conspire to deny Shenhua the best players they can get. Nothing's going to change in the near future for Shenhua. It's going to be a process of several years to see if the young players come through and deliver the goods, because there's not going to be any real talent come from anywhere else.
Yeah, not an optimistic spin, but it's hard to be optimistic on things the way with the game went. I think we can move on from that one, because there was a lot of other football and a lot more goals. Brandon, I don't know how much of the Evergrande Tianhai kind of national training team derby you managed to catch. I think despite an own goal of the season contender, it looked like there wasn't too much dodgy business here, just two teams with quite different levels, really.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised both at that there wasn't sort of, as you put it, the dodgy business, and that Tianhai didn't show up or didn't put in a better performance in this one, especially with Evergrande having red card issues and other things going on, you know. But Evergrande was just the better side. You know, we'll have to see what happens with this Tianhai side, considering they were sort of cobbled together with the number of moves and everything sort of later in the window, so maybe they didn't have a lot of time together. But I do think this is definitely one of the better sides. I mean, a top half side, and this wasn't a performance for a side of that caliber.
Yeah, this new look Evergrande did really do a number on them. I mean, one of the interesting things from this game for me, Cam, is that on many other weekends, kind of Jiang Linpeng getting himself sent off in the first half would be headline news. And in a way, he had the most low-key red card of quite a feisty opening weekend. What do you think the reasons are for the number of red cards that we saw issued?
I don't know. Jiang Linpeng's tackle was kind of careless, but I saw it a couple of times in replay. I'm not totally convinced it was a red card offence. It's always difficult because there's all this pressure on referees now to, with the VAR being standard in Chinese football, they want to try and get it right, or maybe not to go back to Shanghai Derby. But we saw Sun Shilin sent off. It was a case of mistaken identity. Then it was actually Bai Jiajun who the referee meant to send off. So I think that's an indication of the kind of pressure which is on referees, and maybe that's something to do with it.
Yeah, Clattenburg flourishing the red with his kind of China debut there as well. I think he's up to three countries refereed in now on his own little world tour. Yeah, kind of going through our own tour of the teams at the top, all of last season's top 4-1, all of them avoiding what were banana skins in some way. And in the end, Brandon, it turned out that you were right in the war of the predictions. It was kind of a tight, low-scoring game in the Wuhan-Guan game. Not necessarily pretty, although a very nice free kick to win it. They got there in the end. How much of that was down to their new defensive signing, whose praises you've been singing already?
Yeah, I think everyone's very excited about Kim Min-jae. Just an unbelievable performance, and even a really bad mistake on a pass that led to a one-on-one with the keeper. And Zhou Dehai had to come up with a big save, and Kim made a block. Zhou came up with another save on that play. Really, really dangerous moments for Guan at that point. But he definitely came up big, and Zhou came up big in goal. I think I said on my post today, it was the most unimpressive of Guan signings this offseason, and there really wasn't a lot expected from him. But he really had an impact on this match. And, you know, I'm happy that Guan came away with the 3 points. It was a tough slog, especially with the muck and mire in Wuhan. But, you know, Augusto's free kick delivered.
Yeah, quite a way to step up and win the game. Very good turnout in Wuhan. And actually, Cam, across the league, we saw fantastic attendance numbers again. Do you think that we're going to see those hold up over the season? And is this a sign that despite everything else, football culture is somehow kind of taking root and the fans are voting with their feet in a positive way?
Yeah, it's very positive. There was great figures, especially even in Shenzhen. I think there was over 30,000 in Chongqing as well. Well, certainly Shenzhen is a team who have struggled to attract fans when they're last in the season. So, or at least nothing like those numbers. So I do think this is despite and not because of the way the league's been run.
Yeah, and speaking of the way the league's been run, we're going to have our regular what have they changed in the rules since the last podcast section in the second half of the show. But I do think we need to maybe fan the flames of speculation and dedicate a bit of time to a topic which has got the Chinese football internet very, very excited this week, referring, of course, to the fact that Ule, with a tidy finish, it must be said, is up and running for Espanyol, and there are some wonderfully wordy headlines like, you know, the first goal by a Chinese player in the top five leagues in 11 years and other such really weird epithets. Now, I know that there are different angles to come at this from. For me, this crazy focus and celebration of every little thing is actually a little bit patronizing and belittling to kind of a really good player who's in the peak of his career, and we should be expecting this level from him. I'm going to come to you first, Brandon, because you are a bit sympathetic to just how excited people are getting about this, and that, you know, it shows how much we really need a good news story to be coming out right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple different factors. One of them is just, this is the Chinese media is leans towards crazy or leans towards obsessive about these sort of things just in general, and it's been true historically as well. And so there's no surprise with only Ule in Europe right now that that's where all the focus is. But at the same time, I mean, Ule has been doing well. At the same time, I mean, he's fast. He's definitely up to the pace of La Liga for the most part so far. But at times he's been okay on the ball. But at times it seems maybe he's still adjusting. Maybe, you know, maybe there's questions there. So getting this goal, I think, for the player was so important. It should give him the confidence. It shows that, yeah, he belongs. And hopefully it's the first of many to come. And when those others come, we won't be talking about it as much. But, you know, this is the first Chinese player to score in La Liga, the first time, as you said, a top European league in 10 years, you know, let's just forget about everything Jiang Yuning has done. But it's a big deal, and it deserves sort of the praise that it's getting.
I think there's a good point there that I want to pick up on, Cam, in terms of what it does for the player's confidence. Do you think that this media obsession could actually be something that potentially undermines the confidence? Or, I mean, how can you live up to this kind of scrutiny and expectations?
It's probably not helping because it just increases expectations on him. I think he has done well, there's no doubt about that, and it's not to take anything away from the guy. But like you said, Steve, it's patronising. He's a good player, and we shouldn't be seeing this kind of hyperbole from a pretty standard thing. It's like he comes in, gets some games, and he scores one goal. I mean, there's really nothing particularly exceptional about that. Like I said, like I wrote about on the website, it's just an indication of just how completely lacking Chinese football has been in terms of quality or anyone able to go abroad and play. But having said that, it is good that we're talking about this and that we've got a Chinese player who's went to a very high level league, basically for me the best league in the world, and he's looking like he belongs there on minute. That is great, and I just hope it continues.
Well, and I think on that point too, it's important to note that part of this is the fact that for 10 years you haven't had a player going to a top league like this. You know, we've talked a lot previously about Ule, the opportunity at Copenhagen. You know, Zhang Linpeng is a high-quality player. He could probably make it somewhere in Europe, but clubs haven't been coming in, and there's a variety of reasons why, but you know, there are quality players in the CSL. They're quality Chinese players, and maybe Ule, by his performances, is sort of opening a path to get these clubs to start looking more and more at some of these Chinese players, and maybe we start to see more and more of these guys getting a chance.
I think so, but I also think it's not that clubs haven't been coming in, it's that the clubs haven't been willing to sell. I think that's been the issue. I think with Ule, as well, because he's a forward, his performances of being up front and scoring goals is kind of more impactful. But certainly I do suspect there's a few other players who might be able to play in Europe let's hope that that happens, because this is definitely a good thing for the game. That's the main thing.
Yeah, and I think there is a good point there that perhaps because he is a goal scorer, there's a lot more excitement around this than, you know, perhaps if they're sending good quality midfielders overseas or something. We will continue our regular kind of Wule watch section. It's been more interesting so far than Jiang Yuning watch ever was, so that's definitely good news for the pod. But yeah, I think cautious, guarded optimism. Let's look back at the end of the season. We obviously all think highly of him as a player and want to see him do well, but you're not going to see too much obsession here. One thing that we are completely obsessed about, of course, is the phenomenon of the week section and poll.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
We saw an overwhelming winner from the field last week, and probably has to be, I think, said the right winner, with pretty much half of the listeners voting for, you know, fond memories of Yen Bien and that dearly departed now League One club. There's an awful lot for us to pick from the opening weekend, which certainly wasn't short on drama. Cam, I'm going to turn to you first. Who, what is your phenomenon of the week for this week?
It simply has to be, once again, the CFA for changing the rules about player eligibility for naturalised players the day before the league kicked off. I think that's just a phenomenally insane thing to do.
And that's a nice little precursor to what we're going to be talking about straight after the poll as well. Very smooth flowing there. Brandon, do you have a nomination that's going to be sticking the boot in, or do you have something to celebrate this week?
Well, with Cammy's smooth segue there, I think I'm going to have to give it to someone going back to our last topic, who was a Chinese player in Europe. And, you know, just as an aside, this one surely won't win, but, you know, Li Tie has had basically the same haircut for the past 25 years and has a tendency to blow like the front locks of his hair up as like a nervous tick or something. And he's still doing it at Wuhan after all these years. He did it as a player. He's still doing it as a coach. So Li Tie's blowing hair will be my nominee this week.
My God, that has to be the name of an underground fanzine. Please, somebody make it happen. Okay, and rounding out things, I guess it's up to me to do... Well, no, Brandon's already got the quirky one, but for me, the only possible nomination this week has to be the kind of image and video that was doing the rounds on social media of the dedicated fan who turned up to a reserve game with an IV drip in his arm. I mean, we've spoken about the crowds and the dedication, but that is kind of taking things to the next level. So we've got some interesting off-pitch nominations there. Look forward, as always, to seeing what the listeners have got to say and who wins the poll. I think we might struggle to come up with such a solid panel of nominees next time, but we're setting a high standard for ourselves. I'm going to come back, as Cam hinted, I think, to the you know, topic that it seems every time we record a podcast, the CFA or people above the CFA quite possibly decide to change the rules and make all of our previews and predictions look a little bit silly. We're used to it now. We roll with the punches. But, I mean, this latest change is remarkable, basically, and there's still a lot of confusion around it. Ultimately, there's a ruling that despite having passports and shenfengjuns, not all Chinese players are created equal. Cam, you brought this one up as a topic, so do you want to give us a quick kind of précis of what's happened, what the current impasse is, and then we can discuss just how ridiculous this is and what we think it's going to mean?
For several months now, several clubs, including Guan, Evergrande, Shenhua, have been talking about bringing players to China and naturalising them so they can take up slots as Chinese domestic players and not as foreign players. So this is not something which has appeared out of nowhere. And to all intents and purposes, this seemed to be ratified. And last weekend, in the Super Cup, Guan played SIPG and John Ho Sater, whose Chinese name is Ho Yo-Yong, played in the game. So that seemed to be that everything was sorted. But then suddenly, literally the day before the game, there was not even an announcement. There was a leak from a journalist somewhere that the CFA had suddenly said that naturalised players will not be able to play in the opening two rounds, which was just... I mean, I was flabbergasted by this because, I mean, Hou Yao had already played. So what was the problem? And it was even more strange that it wasn't even an official announcement. But of course, over the weekend in the first round, none of these guys played, which obviously was not a coincidence. So right now, as we stand, these players who have been signed on the understanding and signed contracts and wages of money or whatever has changed hands and contracts signed on understanding they would play football as Chinese players this year has suddenly been changed in the last minute. And the fact this has not been made in a public announcement, I just find this to be, and it's up there with the craziest things the CFA's done when that's saying something.
Yeah, Brendan, I feel like I'm asking this question almost every second week now, but have we hit a new low in terms of how crazy these rule changes are? I mean, this might be the peak of the madness, and you know, a number of clubs are really impacted by this because, you know, they'd planned their squads and training based on the assumption these players were going to be available.
Yeah, I mean, there's no peak to the CFA madness, unfortunately, and I also think we all have Shenhua to blame for this because I think the policy, at least the way that it's been conducted by Guoan and Evergrande, is about bringing people on that have the potential to improve the national team, to help out, to help smooth over the sort of weakness in the national team as it goes through generational change. Guan definitely was prepared. I mean, Nico Yanaris, there was issues, there was questions whether he'd be in on time. Everything came down. He was registered with the CFA. It seemed good. He traveled with the team to Wuhan. It seemed like they were going to have both him and Ho Sader available for this match, and then this comes out. I think a lot of this is driven by Shenhua's signing of a half Chinese, half Gabonese player who had already represented Gabon and could not play in the national team. And I don't know if that took it to an extreme or what caused this. You know, there's the theories that maybe this was because Evergrande's players aren't ready yet, sort of the conspiracy theories, if you want to believe that. But it's crazy. Why two games? It's just sort of, it does give them a bit of a window because the national team, there's the break for the China Cup. And so the next game isn't until after the first two games. The next game won't be till the end of March. So there is a bit of time for them to work and figure this out. So maybe that's why it was two games. But it's just a really weird situation. And we start off the season talking about yet another weird situation caused by the CFA.
I think it is triggered by Shenhua's signing of Ombombu because he's played for Gabon before. So according to the rules of football, which everybody except the CFA seems to have known, that you can't play for another country if you've played a competitive international for another country previously. But the thing is, it just goes back to the really unhealthy and myopic obsession which the CFA has with the national team. It's not, to have a strong national team, it's not just the top of the pyramid you need to force to enforce it. You need to strengthen the base. And part of the base which the national team is supported by is the CSL. And even if these players cannot play for the Chinese national team, they're still increasing the standard of the CSL and they're still increasing the standard of which other Chinese players have to play against. And that can only be a good thing. And frankly, I find it pretty absurd to stop someone from playing for a Chinese team, as a Chinese club, as a Chinese player, if they've been registered as a Chinese citizen, when there's literally dozens or maybe even hundreds of Chinese players who are never going to get anywhere near the Chinese national team and they're Chinese. So for me, this is just a sign of the fact that the focus in Chinese football from the top to bottom is just in the wrong place. It should be focusing on getting things right lower down and not always having everyone have to have a direct illustratable benefit to the national team.
And I think there's something else to this too, and it's sort of it's really ironic that I think I'm Dabia, or what? Sorry for my mispronunciation. Whatever the name of the player that Shenhua signed is actually probably, you don't want to get into these sort of discussions, but is quote unquote the most Chinese of all of these guys. His father had spent his mother's Chinese. His father was in China as a student, and I think working here. I think he had spent time growing up in China and everything, at least a little bit of time. So he has much deeper ties to China than any of these other players that had spent basically their entire lives in Europe or in other places. places. And so, and I think he was even once a Chinese citizen, and so it was why it was so easy for him to switch over. And though he's represented Gabon, he's choosing to go back to his Chinese roots. This should be, I guess, something that should be celebrated, or something that, that is a positive story here, but it's being pushed to the wayside.
Well, I think the critical factors are, you know, unlike the other players, he's probably not very good, and he has an awful lot of tattoos. I mean, do you think that there are any broader kind of... I mean, you know, it is just the CFA making crazy football rules that even fans and media are being outright hostile and critical to, but there's a really dangerous kind of social or political... you know, outcome from this. And I think Brandon touched on it there. Like, are we really at the point where we're talking about degrees of Chinese citizenship? It should be a fairly black or white thing, shouldn't it?
Well, the criticism of this decision is quite remarkable. It's been fairly, very directly criticised in a very, using pretty strong language in a lot of quarters. The thing is, like you've been saying, it should really be a good news story. It's like people are willing to take up Chinese citizenship to play for a Chinese football team, and that's a really nice story. Or even just to play football in China, they're willing to become a Chinese citizen. And this is something which China should be proud of. It shows that China is attractive enough to have people willing to change their passport. And that's a good thing for China's soft power as well. It goes beyond football. It goes beyond just the sport. It's a good thing for China. So I think it's just this, like I say, always back to the real utter obsession with everyone must benefit the national team directly. And they don't see that is a much wider thing. There's a way more complex picture. There's so many elements which contribute to the complex ecosystem which supports the national team. And they're far too one-dimensional about it. Also, as things stand, Hong Kong players now have a slot where one Hong Kong player in every squad can play basically the same as a Chinese player. But according to the rules, which have not been clarified, but Mbombo is apparently going to basically be seen as simply a foreign player, which is I just think it's ridiculous. And also, he's probably going to miss out financially because he's barely going to play this season if that's the case, and that means that he won't get his pay bonuses, he won't get win bonuses. It's just wrong on so many levels.
Well, although he's probably still better than Romero, so maybe he'll get some minutes. Let's try to end by getting back to the matters on the pitch. I'm sure we're going to have plenty of chances through the year to come back to the latest and greatest rule changes as the CFA tries and fails to bottom out somehow. Some interesting games to look forward to on the weekend. I want to start with a couple of questions that we did get from the listeners. Firstly, from a boy named Sue, referenced Johnny Cash, and you will always get read out on the show. More of a comment than a question, but a promising start for Shenzhen against Hebei. I mean, Brandon, maybe it was a bit unfair that we didn't big up Shenzhen for being a promoted team to win and win comfortably in their first game, and they've got a great chance to make it 2-2 as they take on Tianhai as well. Early steps, but they're looking like they belong.
Yeah, I mean, that for me was probably one of the biggest surprises of the weekend. I don't know if we really expected that much out of Hebei, but I expected Shenzhen to potentially be a side that's going to go right back down. So in their win, in their big win, I don't know if that's just chalk it up to excitement over a return to the top flight or what. But that's an interesting game, them going up against Tianhai. And equally interesting, you know, your lot and Hebei, to see what happens in that one, to see, I mean, what went wrong. And these are two relatively bad teams that, you know, I expect to be just above the relegation zone this year with Shenhua and Hebei. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that one, too. There's a really a lot of interesting fixtures this weekend.
Yeah, a number of the games on Sunday could be uncharitably described as early relegation six-pointers. Looking up the table, it could be the trickiest test so far for Shanghai International Port Group, Cam, with a game against Yangtze Delta Derby rivals up in Nanjing. At what point does this become their biggest local game, it has to be asked?
They're going to get more of a challenge than they did off Shenhua. Jiangsu's success, I think, in recent years, like we talked before, I think has been down to their emphasis on having some foreign talent in defence. Something which SIPG don't have, but I think SIPG are probably, I would think they might have enough to edge that one. I would predict them to come away with 3 points, if not a draw.
Yeah, it could be a tricky one for them, and interesting to see how they go there. There's only one game for the football, or the Chinese football hipsters to watch, I think, though, Brandon. RNF against Dalian. Presumably you're tipping up Dalian for the big win here, given how we know you feel about RNF.
Nothing against RNF.
There
but
will
I
be
don't,
goals.
There definitely will be goals, and I don't think RNF is as strong as Dalian. Dalian made a couple of moves late in the window, so maybe they need some time to settle. Both of these sides are coming off with draws against teams that, you know, maybe we didn't expect them to draw against, that we probably expected both of them to walk away with wins. So they're going to be gunning in this one. It's going to be exciting. I have a feeling it'll be another like 3-3 draw or something, both of them walking away with a point.
Yeah, hard to see either of those sides keeping a clean sheet in that one. And one other question I just wanted to quickly touch on that we got from Roy Tadmore on Twitter, Cam. Who do we think is going to be the big victim of the ACL group stage curse in the league this year? I know that we've said we're not hugely optimistic about how a number of the Chinese sides are going to perform continentally, but looking at their kind of upcoming league fixtures, do you think anyone's going to suffer from those midweek trips overseas?
I think all of the Chinese teams are not going to do well in the ACL this year, because there's such emphasis on the national team and this being a World Cup qualifying starting at the end of summertime. How to say, Chinese whispers thing going on, where clubs are not really being encouraged to have been in a position where they will need their players to be playing too many games at that time of year. And also, there's a lot of the games are spread out this season very, very strangely. There's something only like 7 games played in the last 3.5 months of the season. So I think we're going to see some unusual patterns this season as regards the ACL goes.
Yeah, Brandon, are you concerned about this from a Guan perspective? I mean, in a way, it might almost help them, because my concern about Guan would be that they've just changed so many players through the summer that they're looking for ways to give people game time and looking for a chance to get them to gel. So maybe a bit of fixture pilot might work in their favour.
It was a tough win against Wuhan. You know, they're going to be excited. It's a big deal going to Junbuk, this sort of top Asian side, that you know, real historic side and everything. Going there, I'm hoping for a draw. I don't think I can look forward much more than that, but a draw would be a great away result for them. And then going to Chongqing and, you know, not having that same energy, not having that same momentum. So my biggest concern is slipping up at Chongqing. I think the side's going to be focused much more so because of the fixture congestion on the league. I think Schmidt we've all talked about sort of our feelings that Guan is one of the top contenders. And I think that's where the focus has to lay. So I'm not sure if the ACL is going to be as important for them. But if they get a result in this one, if they get a result in 2 weeks' time against Urawa at home, I think maybe the equation changes somewhat too.
Yeah, it's early to say, as we said, but we could see a number of them, I think, throw the towel in quite early if the early results go against them and start fielding some youth teams. But lots to look forward to there. And when we have the prestigious China Cup international break, we will get a chance to do a bit of a debrief on how the teams are going in the ACL so far and if we think any of them are going to be able to represent the country with pride. But we've looked back on a lot of games. We've had a chat about the latest crazy rumours and rules, and we've given a bit of a preview. That's a pretty standard Chinese football podcast by our standards this week, I think. Brandon, great having you on board as always.
Yeah, for you know, being the international man of mystery in the group in the pod. For those following me on Twitter, I'll be off to Seoul and Junbuk this weekend, though I'll be back in Beijing next week for the pod.
I can't keep up with this guy. Are you going to be safely ensconced in Pudong until we next speak, Ken?
Will be. I've locked myself away from all sharp objects, and that's going to continue for a few days yet. So thanks for another good pod, everybody. And you can see my latest witterings on the whole Shanghai Derby debacle on the website. I just published something.
Yeah, plenty of ways to put the boot in there. And thankfully, it's still nice and sunny here, so that derby didn't entirely ruin my weekend, although, my God, they had a good go at it. But we're going to move on, as we always do. And for this week, this has been your Chinese football podcast brought to you by World East Football. I've been your host, Steve Crooks, and we'll be seeing you all again next week. Thanks for listening.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。